Hello. How is everybody this week?
I'm good.
You're good?
Yeah, you caught me off guard. I was just having a sip of my tea.
I know, I waited. So hello, Mike. How are you doing? You all right?
Doing okay. Just moved into my new place, so.
I can see, listeners, it's very fancy. I'm watching on the Skype webcam.
Yeah.
It's a nice sort of dado rail running through the middle of the room.
Yeah, that's the main feature. That's why we got the place, the dado rails.
I can see. Oh, yeah, I can see. It suits you. Okay, so how is everybody out there in the world of listeners? I don't know why I'm asking you. You can't really reply.
I can't answer.
Tell you what, let's leave a gap. So, hello, everybody. Cool. How have you been? Ah, good. Okay.
That's nice.
All right. How is she? She's still with that guy? Shame. Anyway, that's enough of that nonsense. I don't know why I'm even bothering. No one's getting in touch with us, are they?
No.
What is this? This is the third episode we've been running an appeal for just one email. Nobody gives a shit. So you know what? I'm not offering you anything this week.
No.
If you want to email in, you'll still get a paperback copy of Fantastic Mr. Fox and a paperback copy of Misery, but that's your lot, all right?
That's a lot, yeah.
Back to the source podcast at gmail.com. Whatever. Okay, so on with this week's episode. Oh, last time. It's been a while, hasn't it? It's been about 3 weeks since the last one, yeah.
Yeah, because I've moved, I've not had any internet, so it's been a bit difficult to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's understandable.
So apologies.
No, it's all right, no one complained. But what did we do last time? I can't even remember what we did. Misery.
Yeah.
Any notes on that? Or I think we did all right.
Yeah, we did all right, Tom. Seeing as we had a practice run,
yeah,
I think we got off.
We didn't really screw a lot up. Okay, so this time we are looking at
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. So it's a 1994 film directed by Robert Zemeckis, based on the book by
Winston Groom.
Okay, so this is one of those ones that it's not really, in the public eye, not seen as an adaptation, is it, really? Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I don't think many people know. I think the film's more famous than the book.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it's more of a film in its own right, and then it's not many people, I don't think, went into this because of the book, or even knowing of the book. I didn't even know it was a book based on a book until you told me.
Yeah, and I didn't know until I had the idea for this. I sat down, I took all the DVDs off my off the wall, went through them and just looked at the tiny writing at the bottom where it's got all the credits, see if it said based on a book. And I looked at this one, Forrest Gump, quickly, and I was like, oh, that is based on a book. So I was quite surprised. So this, it was one of the first books I bought for this project.
Back to the source.
Project Back to the Source.
Because I had it in my head that you'd read this a long time ago then. What's your relationship to this? You read the book recently?
Yeah, well, I got it about, when did I have the idea for this? About a year ago.
Okay.
Yeah, about a year ago. It's not a particularly long book, but it's a good read.
As we'll discover. So I've never read the book. I've seen the film a fair few times. Not when it was first released, but, throughout the years. So do you want to tell us a bit about the book then? Because I haven't really got much research in that area. What's your knowledge on it like?
I'm not sure. I've just read the book. I've not looked up anything about the book. But it's basically the story of an idiot's life.
Okay.
Pretty much. And the crazy adventures he gets on over a space of, I think, it's about 40 years.
Okay.
I think that's the span of it. And like most people have seen the film, you can see what sort of weird and wacky things he gets up to.
That crazy Forrest Gump.
He's so dumb.
But no, as you were speaking that, because I went and bought the Blu-ray for this, and that's got some really nice special features on it. And there was an interview with the author, Winston Groom, was it?
Yeah.
Saying that it was based on a story that his dad had told him. About a boy that lived in their neighbourhood, his father's neighbourhood when he was younger, who was, a little bit
Simple,
yeah. And like he used to get teased a lot by all the kids. And then one day, this boy's mother bought him a piano. And then suddenly there was just this gorgeous piano music spilling out of this boy's house and no one bullied him anymore. And, oh, and that's the story that gave Winston Groom the idea for the book. Like this person who was very, very sweet, very, very, I don't know, like sweet, yeah, sweet and good natured, but just a little bit slow in how he got on through the world.
Yeah.
Someone took an interest in that, bought up the film rights, but it wasn't an easy road to get the film made. Have you heard about all the troubles they had?
What was that?
There were. It was just getting that story from the book to the film was not an easy process for them. They went through many, many rewrites, many, many drafts, trying to pull out the most important bits and put them onto the film. And
right, okay.
Originally, it was the original novelist wrote the screenplay for it.
Oh, right, okay.
But then I think at some point along the line, they decided that it wasn't the right way to go and they got other people in to look at it. And then the director, Robert Zemeckis, came on board.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really where it took off because this guy is, you know, I think he's got the right sort of attitude for this film, don't you? He's got that sort of, you know, kind of real life adventure sort of thing going.
Yeah, that's it. I did read that they bought the rights to this book in like 1988.
Oh, wow, okay.
But they didn't make it because, what was it? It came out, Rain Man. They thought that had stole its thunder, so they wouldn't be able to release it.
It's interesting because they're such different films, but because of that one little point, they would have been compared at the time, definitely. Yeah. So, brief rundown of the plot.
I think I did sum it up. It's the life of... a guy who's a bit simple and all the things that happen to him along the way.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to surmise, isn't it?
Because there's not one like story going all the way through. It's little chunks of here's something happening now, a new thing happens. And I suppose the one thing that runs all the way through it is his relationship, the film, is his relationship with Jenny and how they eventually come together.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially, just to recap, sure, everybody listening to this already knows you're an idiot if you haven't seen the film before listening to this. But it's, Forrest Gump's growing up in the south of America. He's not the most intelligent person ever, but his mother really struggles to sort of get him a good footing in life. He makes the friend with a lady called Jenny and their childhood sweethearts. And then Forrest grows up and has adventures. But you're right. He always sort of comes back to her. And I suppose that's the main driving force for the film, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the story itself is definitely episodic, isn't it? It's definitely these chunks of plot that are linked in not all the time very strong ways. They just go from one thing to the other.
Yeah, they do. They kind of fall into another one. And it's very similar to the book, actually, that they do. He just falls into it. In the book, he goes through all these different adventures and he goes through a lot that aren't in the film.
Okay.
But it is always just falling into this other a little adventure. That's all I had to say about.
I think I remember them saying that that's one of the reasons why they had so many problems with the script, because it's an unwritten rule that episodic just doesn't work in a film. You need to have one consistent plot, and it's one of the reasons why they had a hard time getting that right. And I mean, before we get into the differences too heavily, is Jenny as strong a presence in the book as she is in the film?
Yes and no.
Okay.
She is a strong presence. She's the one he's always thinking about and he's trying to find her most of the time.
Right.
Where she is. But she's not so fucked up.
Okay. Yeah.
She's fairly normal. And that's where it differs. She is so fucked up in the film.
She really is, isn't she? Yeah. I wonder why they made her so fucked up. Because, I mean, she starts off abused by her father, runs away from home, becomes a hippie, works as a stripper, gets heavily into drugs.
Uh-huh.
And I think in one scene,
she has a joint and a line of coke and then heroin. No, two...
She's doing all the drugs.
Yeah, all the big ones.
I wonder why they did that then. Do you think it was because It's a really horrible thing to say, but do you think it was because that would make it more acceptable for her to have a relationship with Forrest Gump? If he was like the anchor for her? Because he is, isn't he? You know?
Yeah, yeah. I think, to be honest, it always bothered me because she's obviously a very outgoing and adventurous sort of person.
Yeah.
And Forrest Gump is a bit of an idiot. I don't think she'd be interested in him. I really don't think she would be. But I don't think that's the type she's looking for.
I think you might be right about that.
Yeah, but she obviously likes like dangerous men or, you know, bad boys or whatever. And she would be lucky she died.
I can't believe you just said that. Lucky she died.
Yeah,
no, but I can see your point because, yeah, all right, let's play this little thought game out. This is ridiculous. There's no structure to this conversation at all, but it's fine. let's play this out, yeah? So if their relationship had carried on, I think I know where you're going. I think you're right. She would have left him again.
Yeah, she would have left him. She got bored and been like, fuck you, you idiot. I'm off.
Left the kid there.
Yeah, left the kid.
And flipped off.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, you blacked out for a second.
Oh, did I?
Good.
I'm still here.
Okay, so I think, yeah, Jenny, and what I was saying before we went on that marvellous tangent, it was a good tangent there, was that Jenny's one sort of thread, and Forrest's mother is another. I think she's another one that gives him a reason to go back home and start another adventure, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Very much in the film. The book, he does talk a lot about, oh, I should really go and see my mother, but I think he spends like 20 years where he doesn't see her at all. And she's off. I think a house burns down at one point.
Okay.
And she gets to live in the poor house. And then she runs off. What was it? She runs off with some bloke. So he doesn't see her for a big period of time, but he does think about her periodically and go, I should really go and see her.
So do you think then that they took some of those elements out of his mother and put them into Jenny? Because it sounds like his mum has a much, much harder ride in the book.
She has a harder ride, but you don't hear anything about it, really.
Oh, it's just sort of through his, yeah.
Yeah, you hear the odd, I got a letter from the next door neighbour and she said she's in the poorhouse with the nun. Okay.
Fair enough. Yeah. So, okay, right. Watching this film, the first thing that struck me, I did not realise that this was a period film. I always thought watching this, because bear in mind, the first time I saw this, I was a lot younger. I thought it was just set in the modern day.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise that it was, is it 1981 the story's set?
82, yeah.
82, yeah. Because, of course, watching it back again, it has to be set in the 80s, because otherwise he would be too young to have gone and fought in Vietnam and things like that. But
yeah, yeah.
That's very subtly done, because it's just a bus drives, rather than having like a plaque up at the beginning that says 1982, there's just a bus that drives past that has the date written on it for a car. Do you remember that? There's like an advert for a car.
I didn't see that. The only reason I know the date is because when she dies, it focuses in on her tombstone and it says 1982.
Oh, it's on Jenny's tombstone?
Yeah, Jenny's tombstone, yeah.
Right, because at the beginning of the film, a bus drives past and it's a car ad and it says, I think it's some, I can't remember the make of the car, but it says the 1981 model. And that's how they introduce it, and it's such a subtle way of doing it.
Yeah.
Just something I'd never ever noticed before. But
I just watched it about an hour ago. So,
it's easily missed, isn't it? It's very subtly done. That's another thing that keeps the film driving is that Forrest Gump is narrating his story while he's sat waiting for a bus, and he's sort of telling back the kind of life that he's lived up till that point. So just to talk about the crew for a second, we've already said Zemeckis was the director.
Yeah.
Elvin Silvestri was the composer.
Mm.
Do you know what other films those two have worked on together? I'm sure you do.
Those two have worked on together?
Yep.
I'm drawing a blank.
Back to the Future. They both worked on the Back to the Future films. Yeah. Elvin Silvestri and Robert Zemeckis.
Really? Did he do the music?
Yeah.
I always thought that was John Williams.
No, it's not Williams.
Well, is it not?
Maybe. Oh, hang on. I've got an apple. Before I embarrass myself. But because if it isn't, this is like what I was going to say is like the music for Forrest Gump you can really, the parts that Sylvester has composed, they're very, very similar to the music in some of the Back to the Future films.
Now you say it, yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's especially Back to the Future Part 3, where you get that piano music, that is almost identical to the intro music for Back to the Future Part 3. And I'm not talking about...
Have you found it?
No. Fill some space.
Fill some space. Yeah, I love that music. And there was, when I was at college, there was someone who, whenever, because I was in a drama college, or performing arts college, there was always someone at lunchtime would play that music on the piano. It was very weird walking through the halls and hearing the Forrest Gump tune following you down.
Really? Because I don't think I'd recognise it off pat, you know.
I think when I went to college, I just got my first DVD player, that was one of the DVDs I had. One of the first DVDs I got. So I heard that quite a lot, that music.
Yeah, it was Silvestri who did the music.
Was it?
Yeah.
Always thought back to the source. Back to the Future was John Williams.
Well, now we've all learned something.
We've all learned something. And I look like a fool, so...
No, right. That's an easy mistake to make, because the music for Back to the Future, the main theme, it sounds very Williams-esque.
Yeah. Yeah.
But talking about the music, the soundtrack for Forrest Gump is absolutely incredible.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
It's got to be one of the best soundtracks available.
That was, I got my mum one Christmas, the Forrest Gump soundtrack, two discs.
Yeah.
I ended up pinching it.
Of course you did.
Yeah. I loved it.
I mean, for a start, there's a sequence set in Vietnam. You know, as we know, Vietnam has the best soundtrack.
It does.
And then it goes on from there to the hippie scene in, San Francisco and in Washington. And then it just goes on and on through this incredible music. Really, really good. Yeah. You know?
Do you know which band has the most songs in that film?
I don't know for a fact, but I'm going to take a guess say The Doors.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Six, I think.
Yeah. And who... Tracks. Who knew that The Doors and Ping Pong were such a good mix? Because there's that sequence, isn't there? There's the ping pong montage, and every time the scene cuts, it's a new Doors song.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant.
How cool is that? Also, another little factoid. I tell you what, this podcast is going to be a lot like Forrest Gump itself. It's going to be episodic. Did you know, right? Another little factoid.
Did you know? Yes.
Yeah, Sally Field plays the mother.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I've just ruined it. You know what? I'll come back to that later, okay? No. Oh, bollocks.
Just do it.
Well, what I was going to do, right, is I was going to give you a little trivia question and say, do you know, of the cast of Forrest Gump, which actress do you think has appeared in Playboy?
Sally Field.
Sally Field has done Playboy.
Really?
Yep.
I did not know that.
I think I've got a copy of that somewhere. But yeah, she went from that to playing Forrest Gump's mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, did you know she's only 10 years older than Tom Hanks?
Is she really?
Yeah, well, I was about to say when that film was made, but I'm sure she still is.
She's a lot older now. But there we go. So going through the plot, right? Sensitive question.
Yeah.
What is actually wrong with Forrest Gump?
Well, in the film, he's just an idiot, apparently.
Right, okay.
At one point in the book, when he's at college, they kind of discover that he is a, what do you call it, an idiot savant?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because someone gives him a harmonica and he picks it up like that. He can do long equations, with numbers. He's very good with numbers. He can do it like that, but he can barely dress himself and... all sorts of stuff like that. Okay. So, an idiot savant, I believe.
Okay. See, that makes much more sense why they, of the fact that they didn't want to do this at the same time as Rain Man.
Yeah.
Because maybe in those early stages of the script, that was still in there, whereas in the version we've got now, it doesn't really come across.
No, not at all. Yeah, I can see that.
And because also in the film, he has a problem with his legs when he's younger and he can't walk properly. Now, is that in the book as well, or is that something that was put into the film?
That's just put into the film, yeah. Mm. No, that's not at all in the book. I don't know what that's about. I couldn't tell you
just
what that's about.
Crooked legs.
Yeah.
He gets braces and it's all fine. He can run as fast as the wind can blow.
Yes, he can.
As he says. So right on from the early start of this film, it's sort of Forrest Gump sort of starts to encounter a lot of people that are very tied in with American history, doesn't he? And it's almost like a pop culture history of America, because he almost encounters every big stage, doesn't he, up until the beginning of the 80s, you know. And the first one he runs into is Elvis Presley, isn't it, and his mother's boarding house. Now, I'm gonna look this up while we're talking, actually, as well. Do you remember that scene?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Because I've got a sneaking suspicion that the guy that does the voice of Elvis is Kurt Russell.
I read that as well today. I read that.
Is it Kurt Russell?
He says it was him, and it's uncredited on the film.
Yeah.
But he has said that it's him doing it.
I'm not going to.
That's true. If that's true or not, I don't know. But
when I
listened to it, this, because I read that before I watched the film, and I was listening closely, it does sound a lot like him.
Well, he did play Elvis, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
So I can imagine that why they would have brought him back to do that. Yeah. That's interesting. I have a good ear. I'm going through my notes, and the thing I'd written after that is I am attracted to almost every woman in this film. Right. There's something about this, like the South of America, the way these women dress and talk, that I find them all very, very lovely. Even the bus driver.
I was about to ask the bus driver.
Dorothy Harris, yeah.
Dorothy Harris.
Well, I'm Dorothy Harris. every woman in this film is beautiful. And I think like it's just part of this film that, you know, everything's lovely and very fairy tale-y.
About Bubba's mum.
Yeah.
Yeah? Good.
No, because she's in Green Bay, Alabama. I'm talking about Forrest Gump's hometown.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's just populated with lovely women. and to go on from that, right, the way Forrest Gump dresses, did you notice that?
What's that?
It's he has the same outfit on throughout the entire film.
He has pretty much,
or like variations on it.
Variations on it, yeah. Like without the jacket or... Yeah,
or like slightly different shirts and things like that. And it's obviously when he's in the armor, he's in camo. But the way he dresses is extremely fashionable right now.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I was thinking that when I was, because it's been a few years since I've watched it. I was thinking he looks very fashionable. He looks a bit out of place almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks too well dressed.
It's very hipster chic, isn't it? You know, like beige trousers and lumberjack shirt. Yeah, we've already said the film it's like a trip through American history. Is that something that's in the book? Does the book have that same sense?
I think he meets about two presidents.
Okay.
I believe he meets President Johnson and Nixon.
Mm.
I think that's it. I can't remember him meeting anyone else. No. And that's literally when he gets his, Medal of Honor or...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and when... Yeah, and for the football.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
So that's, again, that's something they've added then, this?
Yeah, they've added a lot of that. I don't know if they were inspired by those two bits of... Because the bits where he meets the presidents are, like, very funny.
Okay.
Like, when he meets Johnson, he does show him his scar on his ass.
Right.
And I think he's in the White House garden, and Johnson's talking to him, and Johnson shows him his scar, which is on his chest from the Korean War or something. And so Forrest Gump shows him he's on his ass, and someone takes a photograph of that with President Johnson with his shirt up and Forrest Gump with his ass out.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but that section, because that's in the film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Forrest Gump drops his trousers and shows Johnson his ass.
Yeah.
Is that a gay joke? What's going on there?
I don't know. I have no idea. I think he's just supposed to be flustered by someone showing him his arse.
Because the president sort of leans into him and goes, because he tells him he gets shot in the arse. The president leans in and goes, boy, I'd kind of like to see that. I just wasn't sure. I was like, were they saying he was gay or what?
No, I think it's just like you've got an interesting scar. I would like to see that, but I know you're not going to show me.
Ah, okay.
I think, yeah.
Little did he know.
Little did he know, yeah. And then I think the other one, he meets Nixon as well.
Okay.
And as I remember, that's a really weird bit in the book because he Nixon opens his jacket and he's got loads of watches in there.
Right.
He's trying to sell Forrest Gump a watch, which is really weird. And he keeps hearing things wrong, so he keeps saying, tapes, there's no tapes, and things like that, about, like, the White House.
Watergate.
Yeah, Watergate. I
mean, Watergate's in there, isn't it? Forrest Gump is the one that whistleblows on Watergate.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because another thing is, I know that when they were talking about the Vietnam section, they kind of gave the impression that the book is a lot more politically minded. Would you say that?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, I think what Forrest Gump says about the war, because people ask him what he thinks about the Vietnam War, and he just goes, it's shit. And that's it. It is portrayed like a very gruesome, horrible place to be.
Yeah. I'm sure it was.
Yeah. I'm sure it was, yeah. And it's not so much about walking through the rain and stuff. I think the first thing that happens is, what was it? They're showering them down. They've got they're showering them down. So there's all the men in their like underwear being hosed down, and then they get attacked. So they have to go and cover, what is it? The officers' latrines. That's where they have to go. So they're naked in a pile of shit, sat there waiting, defending this part of the base or whatever it is. And
marvelous.
They're sat there for a day or something like that in the shit.
I was just gonna say, the film doesn't really comment on any of this stuff, does it? It doesn't really pass judgment. It just sort of, you know, accepts that it happened, I think.
And a lot of it, he just says that he's shit, and he doesn't. I suppose it is a little bit now I think of it, but I wouldn't say it was very obvious if it was.
It's not like a work of satire then, or anything like that then?
No, not really, no. It is. I think it is as accurate a representation of being in war as he could get away with. Because,
right.
I mean, a lot of the book is ridiculous. So I think they kept it as real as possible, but not too real, if you see what I mean.
Okay. Mm. This is a really hard one to talk about, isn't it? Because it's not like you can go through the plot and pick out differences. Because from what you've told me, it's just so, so different.
The book is completely different. A lot different.
If we start with, say, let's start with the core characters. So we've already said in the film that you've got Forrest, the mother, and Jenny. They're all there in different versions. Do you get Bubba in the book?
Yes, Bubba. Bubba he meets at college while playing football.
Okay, cool.
And Bubba gives him the harmonica that he plays for the rest of the book. He's always playing a harmonica when he feels lonely or scared or whatever. He plays his harmonica. And Bubba's a football player. And then they're not in the same platoon at in Vietnam.
Okay.
But they kind of come across each other and they end up working together.
Okay.
In the platoon. And then he dies and Forrest Gump goes and finds him. But Bubba's never really described as like a idiot or anything. Like he's in the film, he's a bit like Forrest, isn't he?
Well, he's like a counterpart to him, isn't he?
And from what I got, from what I can tell, he's not even, I don't think he's supposed to be black either.
Really? Okay.
No, from not what I can tell, it was never any reference to it. And he did reference things like that in the book, like if they were black or whatnot. I don't know if it was supposed to be implied that he was.
Okay.
So, and he still has the same aspiration to be a shrimp.
Captain.
Not a captain. Shrimp. He doesn't want to be a captain. He wants to do something with shrimp.
Okay.
Remember, he wants to fish for them or something. He's never specific. He's not too far off. I would say if you took the like the idiot part from the film out, aspiration really.
Okay, but that is great in the film where they give him like another person to hang out with. You know, like I love the bit where they turn up on the beach and Lieutenant just. Dan just says, "What are you, twins?" And then each other, "No, sir, we are not related." But okay, so Bubba's there, slightly different, but he's still there, and he still drives the plot forward. Lieutenant Dan, do we have a Lieutenant Dan in the book?
Yeah, we do have a Lieutenant Dan. Lieutenant Dan is not their lieutenant in the war. He has nothing. He meets him in the hospital,
right?
And Lieutenant Dan isn't angry at all.
Oh, okay.
He's not angry. He was a philosophy teacher, or he was in a university or something. And he kind of, he more than anyone, I suppose, gives Forrest his drive, because he says, you know, you've just got to go with it, what happens. Mm. Just go whatever life throws at you. And that's how he kind of ends up doing all the stupid shit he does.
Okay.
He's not so angry. And then later on, so they separate, and later on he finds him again, and he's a hobo,
right,
on the streets and stuff. He's got one of those little dolly carts that he sits in. He's not in a wheelchair, right. It's a dolly cart, so he's rolling about on the floor a lot of the time. And I think he's homeless, not by choice. He's homeless by choice.
Right, okay.
He doesn't want to live anywhere. He just wants to live out on the streets.
Okay.
I bet he does. And he's not so bitter. He's not got this whole, you know, why did you save my life and all this shit. And he seems to have his head on, but he's gone a little bit nuts afterwards.
Yeah.
After the war, he's drinking all the time and living on the streets. Yeah.
It's interesting, because I wonder how they got to that decision then, because in the film, really, Lieutenant Dan, he's got the most sort of satisfactory character arc.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's the one that really goes on a journey and learns about himself. Even though he's not in the whole film, he's only there for a short section, but he really does go through some changes, you know.
And
that character in the film, I love that character. He's just, you know, what he goes through is incredible. And the way that all ends as well is just so lovely.
Yeah, it is nice. Yeah, it's he stays a hobo through the whole thing, and it's because he wants to be, really. I think near the end, he bumps into him again, and he's shining people's shoes.
Right.
And he's only doing it to make people feel bad that some crippled guy's, you know, shining his shoes, which is weird.
It's just so interesting to listen to these changes, though, because the way you're describing the book, it really is putting me in mind of Gulliver's Travels.
Yes, it's more like,
like these little, almost isolated stories that have something to say, do you know what I mean? Or the characters in them aren't necessarily three-dimensional, they're there to represent something else, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so interesting that a book like that has been turned into a film like this, which is so emotional and just designed to pull on your heartstrings, you know?
Yeah.
It makes you wonder what they saw in this story to think, well, you know what, we can do this with it. We can take it to this place.
Yeah. I'd be fascinated to sit down with the people who made that film and just ask them why do things differently. A lot of it, I can understand why they did differently, but we'll get on to that in a sec. Who have we done? We've done Bubba.
Dan,
So Jenny is pretty much a normal person. She does go on the Vietnam peace demonstrations and stuff like that.
Okay.
But she's in a band.
Right.
She's in a folk band, and then she's in I think is supposed to be like a rock band.
Okay.
After that. So she does that, and then they drift apart, and then he finds her again, and she's working in some, I think it's a tire factory or something.
Right.
It's not really important what she's doing, really, by that. It's just that they found each other again. And then they drift apart again. And it comes to the end. This is this is what I found when I was watching the Forrest Gump again. The ending is so, a lot of things kind of, except for Jenny dying, everything seems to have been, everyone's got what they wanted, and they're all happy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? In the book, she finds him. She finds him again, and she has the kid. And she's married now with another bloke. And Forrest Gump, as you know, he says, "Fine, stay with him, because he's going to look after the child better than I will."
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it was a little bit sad that he's got this son, which he'll kind of never see. He's being raised by someone else. But he kind of... the thing is, the whole way through, he admits that he's an idiot.
Yeah.
He says it all the time, I am an idiot. He tells people, I'm an idiot. Mm. And I think he knows that. So he knows that it's better for someone else, not him, to be looking after his child.
Yeah. I guess, he does acknowledge it in the film, doesn't he? As simple does. He just keeps saying that. Or stupid is as stupid does. And then when he does meet his son, there is that moment where he's terrified that he might have passed this on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? But then, yeah, I guess they wanted to give him, maybe wanting to give him that closure of finally having that relationship with Jenny and a perfect little family, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, it's because, I mean, what it sounds like in the film is they've given her a rock and roll lifestyle, but without the rock and roll, you know? They get her to go and, like, get in trouble and have drugs and things. But it's just not music. I mean, the closest she comes to that in the film is the strip club.
Yeah.
Where she's playing the guitar nude on stage.
Yeah.
Got to say, that is, if strip clubs were like that, I'd be there all the time. Like, I kind of don't really like strip clubs anymore. But if I could go and see a naked woman playing the guitar,
that'd
do it for me, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not as fussy as you, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Cutting that out. There we go. Yeah. Where was I going with that?
I don't know.
But yeah, her journey is a little bit mad, isn't it? Because then she starts off with him. Now, did you know this in the film? Because they're childhood friends, and she is abused by her father. Is that in the book, or is that something that?
Not at all.
They've given her this troubled past where. She was abused, and Forrest is never really aware of that. He says, you know, her father was really affectionate. He was always kissing and touching her, and then that is obviously, you know, implied in the film. And then in the film, it was originally a scene that she was going to kill her father.
Really?
Yeah, she was. They filmed it. They filmed this section where her as a little girl, her dad gets in trouble while he's like ploughing the field or whatever. And then the Jenny... runs him over with a combine harvester.
Bloody hell!
Yeah,
that was reminded me of Misery now. But
yeah, exactly. But no, that was going to happen right up until Zero Hour, and then they made the decision to cut it out because they thought the audience would never warm to her again if they saw her killing her father.
That would really take you out of it, wouldn't it? Because the rest of it is very soft and cloudy. That would be like, what the.
Definitely.
As a child.
Yeah, as the child. Yeah, because she goes to live with her grandmother as a child, doesn't she?
She's a creepy kid anyway. That would just scare the shit out of
her. It would have definitely changed the way that character was perceived throughout the entire film if they'd left that in. Definitely. Mm. Because by the end of the film, you see her with Forrest's son. And, you know, if you'd known that character like that from the beginning, that would have been very different, wouldn't it? But,
And Haley Joel Osment's quite creepy as well, so that would have.
Really,
I would have just thought.
Really is, you know, like very cute.
He looks very cute, but it's the dry way he delivers all the lines.
Yeah, I can really
I'm
see
Forrest
why.
Gump.
Yeah, Shyamalan was watching that going, that's a creepy little thing. I reckon he could see dead people. Now, every time I watch this film or think about it, I just think they missed such a trick, right? What's the name of Forrest's son in the book? Is it the same as in the film?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Forrest.
Yeah.
They should have called him Glenn. They missed such a trick with that.
They did. Yeah.
And I said that to someone else, and they said, don't be ridiculous, because Forrest is too stupid to think of that. But Jenny names him. You know? Jenny could have come up with that.
Jenny's come up with that.
He missed out on such a subtle little bit of comedy. but there we go. I think really they're the staple characters, aren't they? The core characters. It's Forrest, Jenny, Bubba, Dan and the mum, I think.
Yeah, but we haven't talked about one character.
Okay. Which one was that?
Forrest Gump.
Ah. Is he in the book?
He is, yes. and he's quite a bit different to Tom Hanks.
Really?
Yeah.
Detail.
Well, he's described in the book as a 6'6" brick shit house.
Okay.
which I don't think Tom Hanks is.
That's not really Hanks, is it? No.
Oh, no. I think, he's more of your big lumbering idiot. I think he does describe himself in the book more like Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
Oh, okay.
I think, yeah. And, yeah, so he's supposed to be a big guy. Mm. He's still got this sweet sort of thing there, but he can be an arsehole. He can be a prick. And he is most of the times. A lot of the time, the reason why he split up from Jenny or whatever, because they do have a relationship on and off during the book.
Mm.
And most of the time is because he's being a prat or being a prick. Not growing up. What was it? What's she leaving for the first time? Oh, yeah, because he's smoking too much pot.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and things like that, yeah. But he is still the sweet guy, but it's a lot of the time, the things that happen to him are because someone else has pushed him that way, not because he's fallen into it. It's
right,
because someone else wants to. So someone else is going, this was when he was in the band, the pot thing. He was in the band playing the harmonica.
He was in a band as well. Okay.
Yeah, he was in the band with Jenny. He finds Jenny after after he comes back from Vietnam. She's in the band. And, so she's in the band and he starts playing his harmonica along with them and they say, come and join in. So he becomes part of the band. And I think the drummer starts going, have this, it'll expand your mind and stuff. And then he just ends up smoking loads and loads of pot. So that's why she leaves him.
That's really interesting. Because that's just, you could never imagine Tom Hanks, Forrest Gump doing that, you know?
No.
I mean, so in the book, really, you're describing him much more like a typical quarterback then, like a huge, because that's what he does, isn't he? He's a quarterback in the football team and, you know, a big, bulky guy. Mm. I mean, I can see why they didn't go that way.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, to give it to Tom Hanks, who is already likable, you know, and to give him this character, Forrest Gump is just adorable, you know?
Yeah.
I love that scene where he stood on the dock and he sees Lieutenant Dan and he just starts waving like a maniac.
Yeah.
You know, he's just so cute, that guy.
Yeah.
And it just, you want to know more about him. So I can see why they might have, you know, if he had been in the field played by someone like Jason Statham, you know, it wouldn't have. I don't think it would have been the same. No.
You needed, I think that's the biggest thing that comes out of the book. So you realize that he is quite sweet. So you can take away the little bits, you know, the foibles, if you will, away.
Okay.
And you're still left with the majority of the Forrest Gump that's in the book. But there's just the subtle bits of, you know, being not thinking about other people's feelings and things like that, and doing what he wants to do rather than what other people want to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, he never puts himself first in the film, does he? He's very much about the people that he loves, you know?
Yeah. And he is in this, but it does come to a point where it's like he's got Lieutenant Dan with him and he's got Jenny with him.
Mm.
And he's listening too much to Lieutenant Dan instead of Jenny.
Right, okay.
And it pushes Jenny away. So, I mean, he is always doing stuff for other people, but
he's sometimes a little bit misguided sometimes.
Yeah, that's it, okay. Yeah.
Okay, so they're the characters. So, okay, in the film, we've got the big events, which is his childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Vietnam is the next big one, really.
Well, yeah, you got his childhood, then
college and football. Yeah, those two are sort of intertwined, aren't they?
Yeah.
Then there's Vietnam, then there's ping pong.
Ping pong, yeah.
Which leads into shrimp fishing.
Yeah.
And then that leads into
the running.
No, because then after the shrimp fishing, he goes back, doesn't he, to Alabama?
Oh, yeah.
His mother dies.
His mother dies. He starts mowing the lawns.
That's it. Then Jenny comes. Then she leaves. Then he goes running.
That's right.
Reunites with Jenny. Mm-hmm. Life with Little Forrest. So that's his kind of arc. Are they all in the book or are there different parts that get from it to each other?
Let's see. It's easier to go what is in the book. So let's see. Vietnam's there.
Okay.
Pretty much as it is in the film-ish.
Yeah.
Like I said before, characters are introduced at different points.
Yeah.
College football's there.
Okay.
And the ping pong's there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about it.
Really? And the rest of that is...
And the rest of that is either little sections of it are taken out. Okay. Little tiny little bits, or not there completely. The running is not there at all.
Really?
The gardening and his mother dying is not there at all.
Okay.
Jenny dying is not there at all. Yeah.
So it's really that second half of the film then, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that second half of the film. And I understand why, really. Okay. It does become quite ridiculous.
Okay.
Because it escalates.
Yeah. I think those, for me, those bits in the second half, they're the bits that I really, really love to. Like the running, especially the section where he just decides to run the United States. I love that. I can identify with that so much, you know, like that feeling of just wanting to leave your house and just go and see where you end up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot more cinematic, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it's like incredible cinematography of America and like him passing all this beautiful landscape. And gorgeous, gorgeous section. And
that section as well gives you a lot of opportunities to get those little pop culture reference, like Shit Happens and
the bumper
Have a Nice Day thing.
The smiley face t-shirt. Yeah. Stuff like that. I love, and I love the section with where he meets Lieutenant Dan in New York, and Lieutenant Dan is, he's not homeless in the film, but he's just sort of like a drunk and, you know, living a not very happy life. And my God, does that guy look cool with hair, long hair and a beard.
Yeah, doesn't he just?
He looks amazing. and as well, watching this back, because there's they go to a New Year's Eve party, don't they? And they end up taking two women back to Lieutenant Dan's apartment.
Yeah.
I always thought they were prostitutes, but they're not, are they? They're just sluts.
They're just sluts, They ain't paid for nothing, no.
No, they ain't paid for nothing. Cutting that out. but then that's not in the book. So where does it go in the book then?
So after Vietnam, he goes, plays ping pong. You know what? Now I'm thinking about it, he does meet a lot more people. He meets, who's his name? Chairman Mao?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Because he goes to China, he saves his life. He's drowned. Chairman Mao's swimming out in a river or something, and he drowns. And Forrest Gump goes and saves him, and all the Chinese are like, oh, yeah, you're brilliant. The American government are like, you fucking idiot. What did you do that for? We could have got rid of him, and you saved his life. Brilliant. So
again, it sounds like the book is making these statements, you know? It's Swiftian.
Yeah. So, yeah, he comes back from China, and they kind of go, we've got nothing left for you now.
Okay.
Go on, you're out of the army. And he meets Jenny in Washington.
Okay.
So that's similar. But they're to, what was it? Oh, yeah, she wants to, they've got to go into a demonstration.
Okay.
And they've got all these Vietnam vets who've got medals, and they've got to throw them on the steps of somewhere, parliament, a building, government building. So they're all throwing them, and Jenny says, throw your Congressional Medal of Honor. And he throws it too hard and hits like a statesman or something.
Right.
So they arrest him, and I think they end up putting him in a mental ward.
Okay.
Something like that. Anyway, he's there, and they figure out that he is this idiot savant who's got a brain like a computer.
Mm.
And so they pass him on to the people at NASA.
Right.
Yeah. Now, the people at NASA are trying to see if they can get make a space flight to Mars.
Right.
So they're sending up combinations of different people up in space rockets to see if they can do this. So they're sending Forrest up there as a backup to the computer, basically.
I thought that was coming, yeah.
The first woman astronaut, but it was top secret.
Right.
So no one knew. And an orangutan called Sue.
Okay.
So they send, on the day of the shuttle, they send them up. It's got to be a female, that's right. It's got to be a female orangutan because the males are too aggressive.
Right.
But on the day of the launch, but on the day of the launch, they made a mistake and they put a male in there with them. And they say, too late.
NASA!
You idiot!
Sorry.
So they send this male orangutan up there, and Forrest keeps calling him Sue because that's what the other one was called. So it's a boy named Sue now. I can't remember what happened, but I think it starts to pee everywhere, and the pee goes in the controls in this space, in this rocket. So all their systems are broke, and they start to crash land.
Okay.
Right. So
on Mars or on?
No. Right. Back to Earth. Back to Earth. They're not going to Mars. They're just going around the moon or something to see.
Okay.
Anyway, they crash land and they crash in a lake in the middle of Africa.
Right.
Somewhere out in the wilderness, and they're taken by cannibals.
Okay.
To their village, where the leader of the cannibals went to Yale, I think.
Right.
And he speaks very good English.
Of course
and,
he does.
Yeah. He teaches Forrest Gump to play chess. And basically, Forrest Gump is very good at chess because he's an idiot savant. He can see these moves 20 ahead or something.
Yeah.
It's if Forrest loses a game, they'll eat him, basically.
Okay.
So he plays for, like, I think it's 3 years or something like that. They're there for about 3 years. They have them starting to plant cotton seeds or something because they want some income. They want to be a source of trade. That's right.
Right. Okay.
These cannibals. It's getting complicated. Basically, he loses a game one day. They all start to try and kill him. Then the pygmies attack.
Oh, not the pygmies.
The pygmies attack. And then they all have a little scuffle and they get away and then they're saved by the American government three years later. And then he's pretty much dumped somewhere.
Right.
He's dumped back in America.
Okay.
Then what happens? Oh, he bumps into Lieutenant Dan and he figures out that Jenny lives in, I think it's Boston or something.
Right.
So they travel across country to find her and she's working in this tire yard. And so they go to wait for her to finish her shift in a bar. And there's a man there arm wrestling for money.
Right.
And Forrest goes and does it and he wins. And he's becoming... So they meet up with Jenny. They live in this apartment together.
Right.
And while she's at work, he goes arm wrestling. And he's become really good at this arm wrestling. He makes loads of money doing it. And then someone comes in and goes... Tell you what, boy, you can make a lot more money becoming a professional wrestler.
Oh, no.
So he becomes a professional wrestler called the Dunce. And right. He wears a nappy and a dunce cap. And this is why Jenny leaves him for a second time.
Because, I can see her point there.
Because she doesn't like the fact that he's wrestling and being called the Dunce. And what he doesn't know is she got pregnant.
Right.
And she can't stand the thought of a child. Yeah.
Being raised on wrestling and orangutans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, the orangutan was left in...
They left that in Africa, of course.
Oh, he left that in Africa, yeah. He went and said that. So, yeah, that happens. So she leaves. I haven't finished yet. She leaves.
Oh, my God. Go on.
Here we go. She leaves. So he makes his way back to Alabama.
Mm.
And on the way, he finds a chess tournament. He bumps it. Yeah, and some grand... I can't remember what they called the big chess players.
Grandmaster.
Yeah, this old grandmaster says, I'll put you in a tournament. So they go off to LA to go and put in a tournament. But they've got a couple of days to wait. So they go around this movie studio.
Okay.
And some bloke says, oh, wow, you'd be perfect for my new movie. So he goes the next day, the movie where they're remaking, what is it? The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Right.
And he's Creature from the Black Lagoon. And who is starring alongside him? Raquel Welsh. And something happens. He's supposed to carry her out and run off and she's supposed to scream. And he's carrying her out in one take and her clothes rip off, get caught on something and rip off.
Right.
So she's carrying a butt-naked Raquel Welsh. And she's like, well, we can't go back to the set because they will all see me naked. Quickly hide me somewhere. So he runs all the way through LA.
Yeah.
Into the orangutan that has been called, now used in the film. So they get us some clothes or something. He goes, plays in this tournament. No, he misses the tournament. And then, because the orangutan ruins. Yeah. He eventually goes back home and he starts his shrimp farm.
Right.
Yeah. And that's kind of where it gets to, yeah.
Jesus. H. Christ.
Yeah, precisely.
You know what I think happened? I think Robert Zemeckis just went, you know what? I don't want any of this. Just give that to the writers of The Simpsons. It's that. So really, they... I'm amazed. I'm absolutely amazed that they got a film like this out of that, because it just bears no relation.
No, it's craziness. I mean, he opens a shrimp farm, and that's the interesting bit, because the whole way through the film, he keeps getting pulled into these little schemes. Like Lieutenant Dan convinces him to do the arm wrestling and professional wrestling because they can make more money. And he always tells him it's because once we've got enough money, we can open your shrimp business. And that's the way through. He's just trying to get to do this shrimp thing. And it's not until the end of the book, pretty much near the end of the book, that he gets his shrimp business. And that's what's driving him the whole time to get there. And it's the other people in his life pulling him off in different directions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just amazing, isn't it, to think that, yeah, mad. I mean, the way you talk about the book, it really reminds me of another book called Big Fish.
Yeah.
Which, again, very similar structure. And again, the film, I think it sticks. I think that film sticks to the structure of the book a little bit more. But this one, they took some very nice ideas out of the book and just evolved everything around them, you know?
Yeah. It's a crazy ride.
It's a crazy ride.
I think near the end, they tried to make him a congressman or something. But then all his history comes out, and then they say, no, he can't.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to say it again, third time. It really reminds me of Gulliver's Travels. Like, this is what you're describing now, is that kind of structure where the author's making points. It's just... Yeah. And then they left all that behind and made something incredible in its own right out of that, you know?
Yeah. It's a weird one. It's also, I mean, it's all told... It's like it's Forrest Gump's memoir, this is. And it's all told, it's pretty much spelt phonetically most of the way through. And it was spelt in the accent, I'm not quite sure. And so it sounds ridiculous, but it is quite endearing because it's him telling it in his sweet little way how this all happened. To say it like that, it does sound ridiculous.
But the thing is, someone could pick that book up and make a film of that book that would be very good in its own right. You know, it would be a very good film. It would be more madcap and zany.
Yeah.
But I think it would be entertaining and special in its own way.
In places, it's kind of like a French bedroom farce. A lot like that.
Naked Raquel Welch, yeah. So there we go. I think we've done the plot and the characters. I just want to talk, or unless there's anything more you want to add on that point.
No, there's not. No.
I just want to talk about, because like the process this film went on, you know, and like all these things they did to, it sounds to me like Robert Zemeckis wanted to make this more about America, you know, and about the history. And they put a hell of a lot of work in to make that happen, you know. And it kind of made me realise that Robert Zemeckis, he's not like a big name. He's not someone who you put up there. But that guy has led to so many innovations in special effects. You know, he's really pushed the boundaries of it. And it's always come from him wanting to tell a story, you know. And they've always been very subtle things. Like in Back to the Future, where he did scenes where Michael J. Fox was playing three different characters and things like that. You know, he really...
Yeah, yeah.
He pioneered some of that stuff. And in Forrest Gump, what he did was the integrating actors into stock footage and things like that. You know, that was really incredible step forward for this. And in so many places, it works really, really well. You know, like when he's there talking to John Kennedy, people like that.
Yeah. The one that always gets me is John Lennon.
Why does it get you?
Well, two reasons.
Yeah.
Because the lips don't move at the same time.
No.
Which really bugs me. And whoever done the impression, because it is an impression, it's not an imitation, it's a
impression. It's an impression, Why not get a Liverpudlian to do that?
Yeah, precisely, yeah. It always grates on me.
It grated on me watching it. That's one of my notes, is I've got awful, awful John Lennon impression written down.
Yeah. Our religion too. It's just, what's that?
I get the point. It's a lovely, lovely point, but it's horrible.
Yeah.
But, One of the big changes I know they made is there's a couple of big points out of this film that I think got turned into, you know, real catchphrases. And the first one is, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Which is actually a bastardization of the first line of the book. Do you remember
yeah.
that?
I've got the book right in front of me, so I'll tell you that the first line is, let me say this, being an idiot is no box of chocolates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, I think that's indicative of the whole film. You know, they took that line from the book and they've manipulated it to fit what they wanted. You know, they wanted this emotional roller coaster that was funny, but I think at the end of the day, they wanted to make something moving.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what? I hate that line.
I hate it as well. It's a ridiculous line.
It is. It is. Yeah. It's been co-opted and turned into this like philosophical statement when it's bullshit.
Yes, precisely.
You know exactly what you're going to get in a box of chocolates. Chocolates.
And even so, that always bugged me because he's got that big box. It reminded me, like, even if you didn't know what, they've got a card in them.
Yeah,
it will
yeah.
tell you what type of chocolate.
You never know what you're going to get. Look at that card. That'll tell you what you're getting, mate. It's also on the back of the box. You're stupid. But there is one line in this film, and it's not as big as that one, but there's one line that, oh God, I just thought, yeah, that's so beautiful. And when he's it's sort of at the end when he's summing up and he's talking about how people he's met have different attitudes on life and about how some people thought they had a plan, like Lieutenant Dan thought he had, his life was going to have a destiny and a path to follow, or Jenny just thought, they were all floating on the breeze, and then Forrest Gump sums that up by saying, well, maybe both of them are happening at the same time.
Yeah.
That's such a gorgeous statement, that one.
Yeah, that is, yeah. Yeah, it's lovely.
And it's logical.
Yeah, makes sense, yeah. Funny, the catchphrase that pretty much comes from the book, because it's something that he says all the way through the book, it comes up at points, is, I gotta go pee.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that is... It comes all the way through the book. If something's happened, that's normally the first thing that comes to his head if he's put on the spot, I've got to go pee.
Okay.
Like when he's running to be a congressman, he's given this speech and someone asks him a question and he just goes, I've got to go pee. And everyone's like, wow, that's so insightful. Yeah, America, we've got to go pee. You know, and he's there just like, no, I really need to go for a pee.
I don't think that's in the film, but there is one line that he says over and over again in the film.
That's all I got to say about that.
He says that one. There's another one as well. He says, sometime later. And any time he says that, it means that someone's going to die. Sometime later. Someone shot that nice man.
Yeah.
Sometime later, that man died.
Yeah, he was a curse, I think. He went through beating all these people and they died after him.
That's it, especially with presidents. Jesus.
Yes. Yeah.
Except for
Nixon, I think. Yeah,
but then again, he got him indicted with Watergate.
Yeah, there you go. He's the curse. He is a curse.
So the hero of the American people. What a lovely metaphor. Right, I'm just scanning my notes, make sure I haven't left anything out. Covered that. Bubba, yep. Jenny Strip yep. Club, love all the women, presidential gay joke, fancy Lieutenant Dan.
Fancy Lieutenant Dan?
I kind of fancy him when he's got his long hair.
Really?
That's really what I'm getting at, yeah.
Oh, right.
Not all the way.
You know, when I was a kid, when I was younger, when I first saw it, I could not figure out how they got rid of his legs.
God, forget being a kid. I tell you what, verbatim, what I've got written down while watching the film is, I am a huge film buff, I have a degree in filmmaking, but I am still not 100% sure how they did that leg removal special effect.
I tell you, I got it on my DVD, that I saw this, like, how they did the special...
Yeah, it's on the Blu-ray as well, but until I watched that, I was completely in the dark about that.
But it's little things, like putting a table in the way so you knew his legs couldn't go all the way, if he really... You knew his legs were there, but somehow...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
and like
clever.
Taking a chunk out of the boat and putting that in later.
Yeah, and it's again, it's something they've done. That's not a big special effect, but that was revolutionary, you know? And
yeah.
It led on to so many other things. And I think this is a very important film for things like that.
Yeah.
But I think I'm done with my nose other than that. Have you got anything else to add?
No, I'm pretty much good. I've got everything.
Awesome.
I think we've covered all, yeah.
We've covered everything, and what a lot to cover in that. So.
Go on.
Michael Rogers.
Yeah.
Book or film?
This is one I've been mulling over for days.
Okay.
I really can't decide.
Really?
I really can't decide.
Okay, that's all right, because I couldn't decide on Fantastic Mr. Fox, so I'm not going to force you into it.
I really can't decide. Yeah, because the film is it's so lovely and so, you know, it's heartwarming. Mm. But the book kind of captures your imagination as well, and it's one of those books you can't put down. You have to keep reading it as well. It's very difficult. I think the first half of the film.
Okay.
The second half is lovely, but I always think it goes on too much.
Of the film?
The film.
Mm.
I can't really. You know what?
I can totally understand why you're having such a hard time, because the way you've described this is just, they are such different animals. You know, the book. I want to read the book. Before starting this podcast, I didn't want to read that book, but the way you've described it, I do want to see what that's like now.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like it's in that literary tradition of those episodic flights of fancy, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just so not what the film's about.
No.
They're very different creatures, aren't they?
Yeah. Very much. I can't.
You're going to have to like both of them.
I'm going to have to like both. Yeah. I'm going to have to, because I can't decide either way.
That's fair enough, man.
I'm going to call it a tie. I'm going to call it a tie.
Call it a tie. Our first Back to the Source tie.
Yeah.
Look at that. What a road it's taking to get there. I just want to say one more thing, right? And it's a filmy thing. It's not to do with the book or this film in particular. But I was talking about doing this podcast at work, and I said about buying it on Blu-ray. And someone said, why are you buying it on Blu-ray? Wasn't even shot in HD. And I just want to say, for the record, right, this was shot on 35mm film. 35mm film is at least 4 or 5 times the resolution of HD, right? Do your fucking research.
Just take it from the original print. That's what they do, wouldn't it?
I assume so. Yeah, I assume so.
There you go.
Fucking idiot. Fucking email it.
Right. Tom, got to stop this. Stop getting angry with them.
I'm not angry. No. I am angry. Okay. Well, there we go, man. I do love this film. Watching it again, it just sort of, I hadn't watched it in a long time, but it is
an
incredible bloody film when you think about it, you know?
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
I didn't realise how many lines I did know for. I must have seen it more times than I thought, because I was saying lines before they actually happened.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought you were a big fan of this for some reason.
Yeah. One of the first DVDs I ever owned, so.
Yeah, see, I didn't even own it until last week. I had seen it a few times, though.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. So that is Forrest Gump. Thanks for listening.
That is Forrest Gump. Cheers.
This is our longest podcast to date, this one.
Really?
Yeah. I think we're going to clock in at about 1:15 by the end of it. So if you've made it to this point, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we've enjoyed the hell out of ourselves.
Yeah.
So we are going to, do you reckon it's going to be a 2-week break this time? Do you think we'll be back next week? Same time? 2 weeks time?
Yeah, 2 weeks time.
Cool. No, okay. Next time we're going to be doing Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yeah.
Because for a few weeks now, it's been books that you've read, and this time, now it's my chance. It's my
Your time
to shine. Okay. So, yeah, we'll be doing the... Well, let's clarify this. We're doing the recent film adaptation versus the original John le Carré novel.
And
obviously, we're going to end up talking about the TV series and things like that, but they're the two main ones we're comparing. So, if you want to get on board with that, get on board with it.
Get on board,
Or not. I don't care.
Buy a ticket.
You don't, clearly. Okay, enough before I start crying. Back to the Source Podcast at gmail.com.
Or find us on Facebook.
All right, thank you very much, guys. Have a lovely evening.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.